Oh, well, thank you, but no.
I think that you've challenged all of us.
Thank you. Well, thank you for that, but go back and look at the website here and look at the names of those people who have been here before me. Scare you to death, I tell you. It will. I'm being very honest about that. You had some of the greatest preachers in the country. And was it last night somewhere? Was it at dinner? Someone said that Billy Sunday preached here one time on the beach.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And I told him not to be disturbed last night. He didn't have 5,000 on the beach like Billy Sunday.
Well, they'd all drowned today.
But
so.
That's our history in this
yeah.
place, and we must not forget it.
Absolutely.
Back to our roots, that's where we started.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Yes, yes.
And how Christ lowers himself.
Yes.
To the ground. And I think when I think of judgment, when I think about people's judgment, or judgment of myself,
right.
I think of Christ.
Right.
And I think of that moment where he lowered himself to the ground.
Right.
And I say, well, you know, the maker of heaven and earth.
Right, right. Right.
That strikes me
right.
about what leadership is. You know, the servant leader.
Right.
And that blesses me. So
that's a great thought. Yeah.
And I also want to say thank you all because I'm a visitor and a guest of the Cooper family, and this place is truly a blessing. And your love and your stewardship and your heritage and your families and right. everything that you've done. I've only been here for a little over 24 hours, and I.
Wow.
So and thank you all so very much. Thank you for coming.
Well, that's sweet of you to say that. You have to come about 50 years before you're considered a resident.
Then
you can.
I'm sure being a resident has its trials. But I am so honored. Thank you for including me.
May I just say one word, and then Sally. In my preparation for this, I remembered reading the Jewish theologian by the name of Martin Buber. He wrote a book called I and Thou. And in the book, there's a wonderful, wonderful little paragraph when he says, when I die, the only question God is going to ask me is not why were you not more like Moses? He's only going to ask me, Martin Buber, why were you not more like the Martin Buber you could have become? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's touching. Please.
You were talking about people who have the refusal to lead and how they create the vacuum.
Right.
And then you said at the end, what do people see in you?
Right.
And it popped into my mind, what do I see in me?
Good point. Right. Right. Yes. Yes.
But I think that's the unspoken piece. If you don't think if you think you're bad, if you think you're not worthy, mm-hmm. if you think all of these things about
right.
yourself,
right.
without anyone on the outside or your relationship with mm-hmm. God to bolster you up,
right.
it's harder to say, yes, I can step into that position.
Right.
When you look at all the really talented people.
Right.
Right. It's a hard step to make, just pointing that out. And the other thing is, really, God leads us.
Yes.
That's
yes.
Who we are.
Yeah.
That's our
yeah.
lead. But the self idea
right.
is also in there.
Right. That's true. You know, it's interesting when you look back on life. I was an ornery little boy. I had a brother that was 3 years older, and until I was about 10, he was bigger than I was. And about age 10, things changed. But I used to come home from school because I was lonely. My brother was popular, and I wasn't popular. And so I'd fabricate stories. I had the best stories you could ever imagine. And my mother would wait till I came. We lived on a farm, and I'd walk in, and she'd say, and so, son, what happened that was wonderful today? And I said, Mom, you won't believe it. And I'd give her a yarn of a story that would just go on and on and on, and she'd go along with it. And this went on day after day after day, and one day I came home, and she asked the same question. we lived on a farm. We didn't, way back, this is in like 45, 46, and she had a radio, and she listened to the radio. That's where she got her news, and she was listening to what we would call now talk radio, which was different back then, and there was an interview of Satchel Paige's mother, and the interview was, what did you have to teach Satchel? And she said, to tell the truth. And how did you do that? And she said, well, when Satchel would come home and fabricate these big stories, I would finally stop him in the middle of it, and I'd say, now, Satchel, if it don't sound good to you, it won't sound good to me. And you know, that's a lesson. And sometimes we stretch the truth to our own benefits without just taking the hard facts of what they are. So anyway, life is still good all the way around. We don't need to go on unless you are ambitious. I'd have a plane at 4 o'clock, so I'm not to...
I feel better. I thought it was 3 o'clock.
Well, it was, and when you book it on April the 25th, because I kept looking for the decent fares, and they're not decent anyway, but... you can't believe the original plan, the cheapest fare I could get was to fly to JFK to LaGuardia, helicopter over, and from LaGuardia to Charlotte to D.C., and D.C. back over here. It was $600 to do that, so I thought, I'm not going to pay that. So I kept looking and finally get a flight from Fort Myers Airport to D.C. and over here. Made it a lot more sense, but didn't really work out very well. Yes, sir.
You know, I was in the Navy many years, and we spent a lot of time talking about management and leadership. There is a difference between the two, but the difference is subtle, and people disagree about what the difference is. Seems like they're in a way they're somehow degenerate or something. There's something wrong with just being a follower. Can you just comment on that somehow?
Well, but yes, I can very briefly. You know, followers are also leaders because people look at them. So it's the leader who teaches the follower who teaches the one below, and so on. It's really that kind of a system. Can you imagine?
Probably the guy at the very bottom.
Yeah. Well. He's hoping there's going to be a new baby coming along.
Yeah, no, he's the leader of the dog.
But it's a very good question. You know, I think most of us are afraid of leadership, and so we relinquish that role, and we look at other people and see all their talents and abilities, and they can do it better than I can do it. Maybe they can, and maybe they can't. You'll never know until you try. I think, you know, because I grew up on a little farm, I had 9 in my graduating class in high school. I still have my yearbook, and you should see it. It says, most unlikely to succeed. That's what they said about me. And I read that, and I first it really made me mad, and then I thought, you know, when it was written, 1955, then I began to think about that. They're not right. They don't know. They have no idea what I can do. And so something spurred me on to move to another level of looking at it. But I was always like a sponge, looking at people who had greater ability and greater talent and could do things that I couldn't do, and say, how can I become more like them? And that's, it, to me at least, it's kind of the injection of a leadership germ that goes into your system. So, yes, Jim.
To respond to that question, you can be both a leader and a follower.
Exactly.
So, as you know, I'm a deacon at our church.
Right.
And we've got some deacons that head a particular committee, and they're a leader of that particular committee. And they've got followers on that committee. And then there are followers on that particular committee who are a leader someplace else.
Right.
And in my former life, I owned a business, and I had some people who were extraordinary people who could fix cars, and when they went home, they were leaders in their church.
Right,
so
exactly.
They were both leaders and followers.
Right.
And that happens all the way through life, I
think. It does. Yeah, absolutely true. Absolutely true. Yes?
Can I just ask you one question?
Please. Oh,
about a particular passage of scripture that's been kind of coming up a lot for me recently, and it has to do with leadership. It's the Good Shepherd passage.
Right.
I am the good shepherd, sheep know my voice.
Right.
Can you just give me just a quick little nutshell on your take on the separation of sheep and goats and how that connects to the Good Shepherd concept?
I have no idea.
No idea.
When I was really young, and I would tell my dad, that person's going to go you know where. And my father would say to me, now son, we are blessed that you are not the vice president in charge of admission into the kingdom of heaven. And so I'm not shy from the question, I don't know. But I do know that God is still in charge. And what God does with the goats and the sheep is God's business. That's maybe not a good answer, but I don't know. Well, it would appear that that might be the case, but still, you know, it's a parable. All I know is I was having a conversation with a gentleman in the back about going up on a farm and having sheep. And it's just a touching little story that they had a fence row, and he was to clear the fence row, and he got really smart one day and got some sheep. They took care of it. But it took him a while. I'm telling you a story. If I'm not accurate, you help me. Took him a while before the sheep could go at the end of the hedgerow and he could call them, 3 years as I recall, and they then knew his voice. So that's the parable, the good shepherd and the sheep. The sheep knows the shepherd's voice. Yeah.
And the interesting thing about sheep is people who study animals will say they are probably the dumbest
yeah, that's right.
on the face of the earth, but they know a voice.
They know a voice.
And goats can be shepherded, so I was just really yeah.
Right. Well, I have a habit. It's not a good habit necessarily because it won't work. To write down all those questions that if I get into the kingdom of heaven, I'm going to ask God. And when I told that to a couple of friends of mine, they said, "Do you know the fact that God may be also having a list of questions for you, and He will go first?" Yeah, that'll wake you up, won't it? Yeah. So true, so true. So I worry about a lot of things, but most of which I have no control over and I can't fix. So I try to spend more time now doing those things that I do have some responsibility for. By the way, you know, to be an authentic leader and a Christian, you're going to be criticized. That's just a part of the package. And if you can't handle the criticism, then probably you shouldn't do it. But criticism is only skin deep. And, you know, if you can go away with a sense of integrity that you still believe what you believed before and you did what you think was right, then you're fine, no matter who criticizes you. Ministers are handsome targets, as you know. We live in glass cages, not house, glass cages. And there are more rocks thrown at ministers, I think, than any other profession, and most of which is deserved, unfortunately. But that shouldn't keep people away from, you know, becoming a believer and a participant and a Christian in the daily life. So, yes?
Just, can you comment, having watched the church for all these years,
right.
Do you see a new wave of the Spirit in the young people, or are you encouraged, or what do you see?
Well, I see some encouragement, some discouragement. I don't happen to be a fan of rock bands in church and so on, but I'm too old. That's not their fault. It's mine. I did work in a church in Fort Lauderdale for 18 months, two Sundays a month, and they had a contemporary service with the loudest rock bands you could ever imagine. And it was the best attended service. But what was interesting is that the older people that attended that would say to me at the door, "Now I'm going to cross the street to worship." Because it didn't fit them, right? I see encouragement by the fact that there are lots of young people coming to church today that didn't before. I see people in the places where I go and speak that they young people come up to me and ask more questions than older people do. I see people, particularly young people, saying, you know, with all the stuff that's going on with the Catholic Church and the priests and so on, I said, that's a problem, but that doesn't prevent you from being, you know, responsible person in your own faith. So I think the church has failed the young generation in many, many ways. We've become too lackadaisical. And so, you know, the average church, how many come? 25, 30%? Till something happens. And then when something happens, they call the minister. And when that happens, they say, what is God doing to punish me? That's not in my book. God doesn't do that. No. So, the human mind is a very gifted element of our body, but it can play tricks on us, and it does so often. I'm encouraged when I read the scriptures by the fact that there has always been, from the beginning of Adam and Eve, a remnant. It's never failed throughout all of history. There's a remnant. And so we'll cycle up, we'll cycle down, and I think we're in a cycle down, but maybe beginning to peak up a little bit. But I could very well be wrong on that, to tell you. But I don't condemn contemporary worship. I think if it's saying something, I don't condemn TV pastors. They're not my style. If somebody learns something about Jesus Christ through that, then God bless them. That's God's business. It's easy to judge, but it's God's business. Yes?
These days, because of social media, we all have our soapboxes.
Yeah. Right.
Religious, not anything. And I just feel like when I do it, sometimes I regret it. Sometimes I feel arrogant or, preaching. And I just feel like it takes so much prayer.
Right. I don't disagree. But I also think that even a little pithy sentence sometimes gets a person to think. I think we learn more from those little quotes like Roosevelt, nobody can make you feel inferior without your consent. That's such a wonderful line. I grew up in a small community and had, admitted frankly, I had an inferiority complex. I wore overalls to go to school because my dad was a farmer and I was made fun of. And then we had a war called No. 2, and we were the Germans, and we lived on the north side of the town, and the Scotch-Irish lived on the south side of town. And at age 5 and 6 and 7, I got into fights every day at school. Called me a geek, a damn German, and so on and so on. And, I didn't like it, and I struck back until finally my father had to intervene and said, leave them alone. You'll never win. But we did win. If you stay authentic to what you believe, you will win in the end. And some of those classmates of mine are still my best friends, even though they beat me up as a 6 and 7 year old, Sometimes I have to remind them of that, but they say, well, that's in the past, But I think the image, I really think the power of an example is the greatest thing we have. It's not what you say that turns me on. It's what you are. That's the difference. That's why the man said, I saw something in you I wanted for myself. Boy, that really makes you think hard. And I wasn't doing it for that. I had no idea what was going on in his mind. And we don't when you say a word like this today. I have no idea what goes on. But something does, and people think. Yeah. Yes.
I have a comment and a question. A comment would be, I hear that your main message is that maybe at night as we're going to sleep, we can say, how did I live today that might have drawn anybody to Christ?
Right.
And my question is to you, if you could say one really important thing to the young ministers of today, that if you had the power to influence them, what would you tell them?
Well, in one sentence, when I started in 1961 and I was ordained that year, I had a mentor, a friend, a clergyman, and he said, I give you one bit of advice. Never take your eyes off of Jesus. Now, I was 20 years old. I was 20 years old, and I thought, well, yeah, sure. Now I'm 80. Guess what? He was right. So if I had something to say to a young person going into ministry and being ordained and going, I would be probably accused of being silly if I said, keep your eyes fixed on Jesus. And I'm not being pious. I'm not being anything other than honest. I think that's the fact. You take your eyes off of the focus of what you're to do, you're going to get lost, and you're going to do things you shouldn't have done. And the other thing this mentor minister said, if you could develop a sense of humility, you will be better. And that hurt, because he knew I had a little element of pride. Well, none of you have ever suffered from that. You've always been always known. But it's very hard to practice. But humility and keeping focused are really key things. When I go to sleep at night, I still say, now I lay me down to sleep, because my mother taught me that, both in German, which I've forgotten, and in English. And I say that quietly to myself. My wife knows I do it when we don't say it out loud. And then I say something like, it's been a good day, thank you for it. Where I failed you, forgive me. Where I've done what you wanted me to do, thank you. It's very simple. But I'm telling you, if you practice it, it makes a difference. And you wake up in the morning thinking, it's a new day. I wake up happy. Very, very seldom am I unhappy in the morning. Partly because I give it all to God the night before. And, you know, I'd wish I had the ability at times to change the past. But, you know, we don't. We just don't. So live for today and tomorrow. I was on an airplane. We must close here shortly. I was on an airplane. I visited my mother. She was in a nursing facility in Oklahoma, and I was living in Philadelphia. And my father died in 67. She died in 77, and she was there for 9 years, incapacitated. One night I was coming back on TWA, and I had the bulkhead seat in the coach class, 2 seats available. I thought, oh, thank God, it's Saturday night. My sermon is not done. It's going to be wonderful. I had books scattered out, and this lady got on board in her 90s, and she said, did you pay for that seat? And I said, no, I didn't. So I moved the books out of the aisle seat. She said, no, I want to sit next to you. And she did. And it was nonstop, brilliant. And she said, what are you doing? And I said, I'm trying to finish a sermon. She said, you should have done it before now. And at one point we got ready to land. She said, remember, yesterday returneth not. Tomorrow cometh not. Today is, abuse it not. You can only do it one day at a time. Hmm? Yes, sir.
One little short thing and then the other comment. I have heard an expression about the past. People, you know, wishing it were different.
Right.
A lot of people spend a lot of their effort and time today trying to get a better past.
Right.
I think that's a really interesting way to put it. But
yes.
Here's a comment. The common wisdom amongst sort of sophisticated Christian thought these days is that Christianity moves through a culture and a nation and a continent and then kind of goes on to the next. And it's already left Europe. It's now moving through North America. It's moving on towards South America and Asia and Africa and so on.
Well put.
And 100 years from now, Christianity is going to be blossoming, blossoming everywhere except in North America. We're going to become like Europe.
Right.
You know, that may or may not be true, but I have a very a good young Lutheran pastor friend who tells me he welcomes the day when Christians in North America are on their way already towards becoming a remnant, just like you spoke of. We're going to be like a New Testament church, and it's going to be great because everybody around us is going to be non-believers.
Right.
I don't know what to make of that, you know, but there it is.
It's probably right. It's already happening, as you can see. Yeah.
Thank you
well,
so
thank
much.
You,
thank
Melody.
You so
it's great fun. Great fun.